Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
This is John West reporting for ID the Future. Earlier this week, the Texas State Board of Education heard public testimony on revised science standards that will govern the teaching of science in Texas for the next decade. Perhaps the most interesting thing about the hearing was how little the Darwin-only crowd was willing to engage the science. Many evolution defenders talked about their own religious beliefs or spent their time attacking the supposed religious beliefs of those with whom they disagree. By contrast, those who testified in favor of teaching the strengths and weaknesses of evolution focused on science, education, and academic freedom. Despite the oft-repeated soundbite from Darwinists that there are no scientific weaknesses of modern Darwinism, the Texas Board heard from a parade of scientists and teachers who talked about specific challenges to modern evolutionary theory. Since you probably won't hear about the testimony of these scientists and teachers from the establishment media, we thought we'd bring some of their testimony to you on this podcast. So today you'll hear the testimony of two biology professors who favor teaching the strengths and weaknesses of evolution. First is Dr. Wade Warren, who holds a chair in biology at Louisiana College.
Thank you for your time. I'm going to keep my remarks very brief. I'm currently teaching biology at Louisiana College. So my name is Wade Warren. I received a bachelor's degree in biology from Louisiana College, received a PhD in zoology with an emphasis in neuroscience from Texas A&M University, and completed a year as a postdoctoral fellow at Georgia State University in Atlanta. Since that time, I have been part of the biology faculty there at Louisiana College, where I now hold a chair position in the biology department and serve also as the associate academic dean of the college. I have been invited as a speaker at Gordon conferences on pineal cell biology, et cetera, publications, et cetera. I'm here to voice my support today for more academic freedom in the science classroom. I'm convinced that teaching young people to become excellent scientists must come from objective teaching in an environment of true freedom. My own life experiences at Texas A&M University as a graduate student speak to this issue. Very briefly, as a graduate student there in the early 1990s, I did attempt to initiate a philosophy of science discussion outside of the classroom environment among some of the freshman science majors. Being somewhat naive, I suppose, a couple of students had questioned, in my presence, the senior lecturer's explanation of life's origins and had been ridiculed in the classroom for, quote, thinking too much. My efforts were squashed quickly by the senior faculty member and the dean, and threats were made to me about my graduate career at Texas A&M. So needless to say, that discussion did not happen. I believe we're doing our kids a disservice not to ask them the questions current scientific thought. Asking good questions and being willing to go where the answers to those questions lead are the marks of good scientists. When my students are presented with science content in the context of evolutionary biology, most of them are capable, even as freshmen, to see that the modern description of evolutionary processes does not adequately explain the observations and facts. The easiest place to see this today is in the physiology of cellular processes. Many of those things have been mentioned today. I won't bore you. Many examples are readily available to anyone interested in looking at the literature. My field of neuroscience is absolutely filled with them. In summary, all that we know today about DNA and the fossil record simply does not support Darwin's theory of evolution. Complex engineering principles are being applied to learn about the role of DNA in today's labs, and the fossil record is certainly not complete. So my question would be, are we going to ask our high school teachers here in Texas to ignore the evidence that does not support Darwinian thought? The analyze and evaluate language, in my opinion, does not make it clear enough that teachers may objectively demonstrate weaknesses in evolutionary thinking. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Mr. Mercer, Mr. Allen, after that.
Thank you for being here today. And you just, you know, put a dot on my period right there. It's just that there's disagreement. And for one side to say, we'll teach it, we'll allow questions, but there's no disagreement. and everything points this way, and everyone believes it, and there's no weaknesses. Y'all have any questions? You know what I'm saying? And when you just describe what happened at university, it's the same thing. People are kind of pushed down that there are no weaknesses. Everybody disagrees, and anybody who disagrees is incompetent. Now, do you guys have any questions out there, students? You see what that does? So I thank you for what you're saying. You just told me, you know, I'm still for strengths and weaknesses. We have an incredible, strong document that's strong in every aspect, moves Texas forward. But I'll tell you one thing. I still want my kids to be able to raise their hand and ask a question in class. And I want to say this just for the record. If our kids cannot raise their hand and ask a question in class, then we're no longer living in the United States of America. Thank you.
Mr. Allen?
First, let me thank you for coming today, and I truly enjoyed meeting you earlier today. But we were having a conversation about students being prepared to function well in college and what your experiences have been there. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to know your opinion based on, because we're talking about this language of strengths and weaknesses, if it's going to better prepare students to come to you at the university, because I talked about the fact we don't have a curriculum that we can truly look at from university to look to university, because it's important to me that we prepare students to go to the next level when we don't really know what's happening at the next level based on Verrett University. So I wanted you to speak to that because that's important to me. If we're going to address strengths and weaknesses like this, I want to know that's helping students, not just introducing some other thought. What needs to be taught more than just this language? I believe it's what needs to be in the curriculum. If there are some specifics, state those specifics, not just a generic term, that will help students perform better in your classroom.
Well, you're going to get a lot of disagreement on this issue, and you've heard a lot of that here today. I was involved in writing some of the standards in the state of Louisiana on a committee there, and I have recently been to the legislature there testifying about this very issue with a similar kind of scenario going on there in the state of Louisiana. The big problem, in my opinion, is the students who are coming to us, not because they haven't been taught a certain set of facts, but because they haven't been asked to think about those facts. And so part of the way we formulated a lot of the questions, and you and I talked a little bit about this Bloom's taxonomy issue and how that sort of comes out of this, but if you present, certainly there's more than one viewpoint here. And I would be for adding more evolutionary biology content to the textbooks and adding to that, thinking about the weaknesses of that. So the point there to make is we need for our students to come to us at the college level able to think, and simply giving them a one-sided view of thinking in a purely Darwinian model, you know, in my opinion, is not right to start with. And what's more important for the educators is it doesn't allow our kids to grow up in high school to learn to use their brains before they get to us in college.
I'm in agreement with you, but if we're saying that the language of strengths and weaknesses have been there for 20 years and we're still producing that kind of student.
Well, I'm sorry to interrupt, but you've heard testimony about the problems with the textbooks.
Wait.
Yes, sir, I'm sorry.
Hold on 1 second. If that language has been there and those students are coming to you ill-prepared, and then we say reinsert that language so they can come to you better prepared, that's what my confusion is.
Yeah, I understand that. Yeah.
So that's all I'm asking is how are they going to be better prepared by inserting this language when you're saying they're not prepared at this time?
Yeah. Well, ultimately, some work has to be done at the textbook level.
That's what I'm saying.
I think removing
what they really need to know more than we use these generic terms and say, well, what are they going to learn when we say strengths and weaknesses? We don't know what they're going to learn. But if you can tell us what specifically needs to be in there, that'll help us get them to you.
I would be glad to make some recommendations. Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Ms. Leo.
Thank you for all your work in science, and I appreciate you working with Louisiana and everybody else. I know that since you instituted that academic freedom language in Louisiana, have you had massive unemployment and other assorted disasters because you have that language? I mean, we hear that argument as well, that scientists won't come to Texas anymore. And further, in order to put those scientific weaknesses into the textbook so that it filters down to the classroom, you have to have a standard that allows for you to put those specifics in, correct?
Yes, I for the life of me, I can't work through why so many of my colleagues in the scientific community in public settings want to talk about how we cannot afford to allow people to talk about the weaknesses in evolutionary biology, but when private settings, you get a different take on that.
After Dr. Warren testified, the Texas Board of Education heard from biology professor Karen Rispin from Letourneau University in Longview, Texas.
My name is Karen Rispin. I'm an assistant professor of biology at Letourneau University, where I teach the upper-level comparative vertebrate anatomy and physiology courses. And I'm in favor of the strengths and weaknesses language. In addition to my testimony and some supporting journal articles, I have given you a copy of an op-ed in today's Dallas Morning News by Dr. Emil Jarsper, a colleague of mine at Letourneau University. He's the dean of the biology department. Science is about making models of reality and then revising and refining those models. This is the essence of critical thinking. These models are, of course, theories. And anyone who has ever attended a scientific conference knows the process is exciting and combative. People have ownership of their theories, and they're defensive of them. And it takes assessing strengths and weaknesses with some courage when the man with the theory is very powerful. In your hand, you'll find a set of papers from mainstream scientific journals describing debates underway regarding evolution. For example, if one draws an evolutionary tree based on fossil anatomy, it comes out very differently than a tree based on molecular similarities. Nature, the preeminent British science journal, states, yet again, molecules and fossils are at odds in the dating of key evolutionary events. These scientists are clearly assessing both strengths and weaknesses. And again, Nature says the molecules versus morphology debate remains both vexing and vibrant. Let our students know that the various evolutionary trees they see each has its own particular set of strengths and weaknesses. In the International Journal of Developmental Biology, a review of the hottest current points, eight serious problems with current evolutionary theory are listed. These scientists are clearly assessing weaknesses as well as strengths. Let me make it clear that these are evolutionary scientists. They are looking at weaknesses themselves as they assess the theories. Paleontologists have known since the time of George Gaylord Simpson, one of the founders of the modern synthesis of evolution, that there are large gaps in the fossil record. Let our students hear Stephen Jay Gould's proposal that the gaps are due to punctuated equilibrium, but don't stop there. Dawkins, eminent evolutionist and atheist, has attacked Gould's theory. Let the students hear Dawkins' responses to Gould. These debates involve sharp dissenting opinions between dramatic personalities. Nothing could be less boring. Rather than bore our students with dumbed-down versions of older models, let's treat them with respect and introduce them to the ongoing scientific debate. I urge you to continue to give them the academic freedom to weigh both the strengths and weaknesses of each model.
Professors Warren and Rispin were just two of a number of scientists who testified about why it's so important to teach students about both the strengths and weaknesses of evolutionary theory. By the time you hear this, the Texas Board of Education may have taken its final vote on its new science standards. For up-to-date reports on what is happening with the Texas standards, visit Evolution News and Views at evolutionnews.com. That's evolutionnews.com. For ID the Future, this is John West.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute 2008. For more information, visit www.intelligentdesign.org or www.idthefuture.com.